And good morning. Thank you very much. It's good to be with you this Saturday. I know what it's like to sit in a class and listen to a continuing education instructor decimate information about rules and regulations. And sometimes I'm going, oh my goodness, would anybody actually want to become a physician if they had to understand all these terrible pitfalls? I mean, I know we have to understand that, but sometimes it's just like a little bit much. I'd rather focus on what can we do to help people get well and to be better and stronger. And I think some of that has to come from just like hearing stories and learning. And so I heard a story from one continuing education instructor. I think he happened to be an emergency. He was a physician that was in charge of intensive care. And to me, I thought the guy was quite brilliant. I always like to listen to guys like that because they have so much to offer. And you can learn so much. And, of course, there's a lot of female doctors also that I listen to in the form of podcasts, but it's just so enjoyable. By the way, this program is called Health Essentials. My name is Roy Morgan. And I want to do everything I can to share information that you might actually find encouraging or you might find helpful, or maybe you're just like I am. It just sparks a thought in your mind and you think, I wonder how I could use or apply this information for my betterment or to help somebody else that I know that's just really struggling. So this is the story that he told. I'm not going to tell exactly because it was his story, but he said one day he was in the ward of the intensive care, and they were talking about a patient that had been admitted to the hospital that had, I think, a really severe case of COVID. And everything was looking bad. They were just about to put the guy on a ventilator, and they were going to put him in, he was going to be in a coma, and they thought, you know what, this is going really bad. He's not responding to any of our treatments or any of our therapies. And so this doctor had this crazy idea. Well, it's not crazy at all. What he did was he wrote an order immediately. He said, take this man, put him in a wheelchair or in a cart, and wheel him out into the sunshine and expose all of his chest, you know, the whole upper torso to bright sunlight. And I think the nursing staff was just aghast. And they said, you can't do that. We can't wheel him outside. He said, of course you can. He said, you can wheel him down to the CAT scan if you want to get a CAT scan, and you can wheel him all the way over to the MRI unit if you want to do that. And if we want to, you know, take him for this treatment or that treatment, we got to move him there. So what's the big deal just taking him outside? Anyway, to make a long story short, this man amazingly recovered just because they put him out in the natural sunlight. And that to me was a very, very interesting story. And, you know, as crazy as that may sound, what if we are actually missing the boat when it comes to what do we do to keep the body in good working order? Now, I'm going to kind of go off on a rail here. There is a thing called the sun. I guess you'd say it's at the center of our solar system. I think we have four rocky planets. We've got Mercury, Venus, the Earth, and Mars. I don't know if Jupiter is rocky. Maybe it's rocky at the center, but I think it's called a gas giant. But we require, God knows all this stuff. It's his design. We require light. Could you imagine if we would have any life on Earth if it was total darkness? Of course we wouldn't. We need light. So I remember after I heard that podcast or that continuing education physician talk about the story, I remember reading this right here, and I want to share this to you right here. This comes from, I think it's 1902. Anyway, let me read to you about this guy just for a second. You tell me if this is interesting, and to me it is. I mean, remember, what's at stake here? What do we do to help the body get back in good repair? Wouldn't that be called healing? And you know, you need all the help that you can get. So do I. So Oscar Bernhard was born in Samaden, Switzerland, the son of a local chemist. He studied medicine at Zurich. Heidelberg and Bern, where he developed a particular interest in surgery. He built up a large surgical practice and helped to establish the Obernagden District Hospital at Smalden, which opened in 1898. Only missed about 100 years. That's 1898. So he was inspired by the success of Dr. Finsen. It was here, as a surgeon-in-chief, that he began to use sunlight to heal, first on wounds, and then he used it to treat tuberculosis. Okay? On the night of February the 2nd, 1902, an Italian was brought to the hospital with severe knife wounds. These included perforating wounds of the chest and two perforating wounds of the abdomen with damage to the liver and the spleen. That does not sound good to me. As the injured man was in danger of bleeding to death, Dr. Bernhard, he had to remove his spleen, which had been pierced. 8 days later, the operation wound burst open and gaped widely with only a few stitches holding. An attempt to restitch the wound failed as the edges could not be brought together again. The wound was slow to granulate, which is technically the first step in the healing process. That's where the red, gooey, moist tissue develops. The surface of the wound where it starts healing and repairing. So he had this horrible profuse discharge coming from the wound where the spleen was removed. And so none of the treatments used to dry it up had any effect. So Dr. Bernhard took a very unusual step at that time of exposing the surgical wound or the knife wound to the sunlight, to direct sunlight. You get that? And this is his words right here. This is Oscar Bernhard. I'm quoting him. As I entered the hospital one beautiful morning, the sun shone warmly through the open window, while a refreshing and stimulating atmosphere filled the whole ward. The thought suddenly occurred to me of exposing this large wound to the sun and air. For the mountain peasants of the Grisons also exposed fresh pieces of flesh to the sun and dry air to preserve them, and in this way makes a nourishing and tasting food called Bindenfleisch. I have no idea. I'm sure that's beef jerky. So I resolved to try this antiseptic and drying effect of the sunlight and air on the living tissues. Then, to the astonishment of the staff, I had the bed put to the open window and laid the large wound open. By the end of the first hour and a half's exposure, there was a marked improvement noticeable, and the wound presented quite a different appearance. The granulations became visibly more normal and healthy, and enormous wounds skinned over quickly and under the treatment. What was the treatment? Fresh air and sunlight. Isn't that interesting? Okay, you're probably thinking, well, how's that relevant to me? Well, actually, this is a thought that I had on the way to the station. You know, so many people, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 93% of all American adults are dealing with some type of a chronic health problem. You know what that means? That means there's actually very few people that are actually radiant and healthy that don't have some type of a chronic problem. If you want to say heart disease or diabetes or depression or mental illness or chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia, severe arthritis, basically I'm talking about a body that's in poor disrepair. What about cancer? Do you realize what a burden that is to your body to be chronically sick? Oh my word. You talk about a pretty good way to prevent a person from getting well. Just develop a chronic disease that you can never resolve. Now, I'm not saying it can't be resolved. I think that's what you should aim for. I think everything that you can do within your power to help yourself get better is a smart, desirable choice. Don't you think getting well and healing is a much better alternative than staying chronically exhausted where you can't function? Every man that I know of wants to work and provide for their family. They want to be productive. They want to grow and learn and develop better skills. It's just so fun. Well, let me read this to you right here. This is interesting to me. Back in the year 1939, there was an American study of 94,000 white males, and get the age group right here. They did a study on 94,000 white males between the age of 12 and 14. Okay, that's all they did. And what were they looking for? They narrowed it down to one parameter. They were looking to see if there's any correlation, any clear-cut correlation between sunlight and tooth decay. I'm talking about cavities. And so they said that those who lived in the northeast of the United States of America, where the average annual sunlight was less than 2,200 hours per year, they had two-thirds more cavities than their compatriots who lived in the southwest of the country, and they received more than 3,000 hours a year. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's interesting right here. The results of another investigation published in the Journal of Nutrition, 1938, they show that the incidence of dental caries amongst American children varied according to the time of the year. Of course, what is the time of the year that you get the most cavities? Oh my goodness, late winter and early spring. But does that make sense? It's cold outside, the days are shorter. You don't really have a tremendous motivation to go outside and play with just a t-shirt and shorts, so you don't get that sun on your body. So they had absolutely the lowest values of developing cavities during the summer months. But then again, maybe there's something to be said about ultraviolet radiation touching your skin, and then your body in turn manufacturing vitamin D. That might be one plausible explanation. Okay. This other study right here, it's also so interesting how we can use natural light that God has designed for us. To me, that's proof right there that God loves us very much and He cares so deeply about us that He gave us the sun. And when I say a sun, I'm referring to a burning hot star at the center of our solar system. Yes, He also gave us His sun, which is much more important than the sun. But for the sake of talking about health, yes, we're going to emphasize the sun at the center of our solar system. Does that make sense? Well, they took a group of, I think this study right here came from the British Journal of Dermatology in the year 1998. Now, this is what I find interesting. I don't know exactly how Finland runs their country when it comes to their health. Maybe they have universal health care, and maybe they provide it for everybody, but get this right here. They had 46 patients from Finland that had such severe, horrific psoriasis. That's a skin condition. That's an autoimmune disease of the skin. And get this. They actually put them on a plane. They flew them to the Canary Islands, obviously from Finland. I don't know if it's due south, but it's like so much closer to the equator, where they let them stay on the Canary Islands, and they footed the bill because that was such a better treatment than what it would cost them in Finland just to keep them in the hospital because of the oozing, weeping, infecting psoriasis. All right. In 1998, some 46 Finnish patients received 4 weeks of heliotherapy. The term heliotherapy is just an old-school term. It's used for what happens therapeutically when we expose the human body to natural light that comes from the sun. Okay. And what they did was they sent them abroad because in Finland, the solar radiation was just far too weak and the sunny days were far too infrequent to have really any impact or long-lasting effects or positive effects on these people that suffered from psoriasis. It says the study showed that it was the only really cost-effective to send patients to the Canaries for the sun if their psoriasis was so severe that they required regular hospital admissions for outpatient treatments. Anyway, the study showed it's absolutely one of the most effective treatments of all time for psoriasis. I personally think it's perfect for eczema. Now, sometimes I have a very hard time trying to convince a person that when their skin is very inflamed and irritated, that just sitting outside, sometimes I have to just try to get people to sit in a chair, wearing like a tank top or a pair of shorts, under a shade tree. I don't know if you know this or not, but leaves on the trees and all the green plants that grow, they actually do a great job of capturing sunlight and bouncing it off their leaves straight towards your body. So you may not get the high amount of the ultraviolet B radiation that might, cause the burning of your skin because that doesn't penetrate, but you get the red light, and you get the infrared, and you get the near infrared, which I find that one of the most fascinating topics. Okay, let's go on to the next one right here. Now, if you will, I forgot to give the number of the station. I'm so sorry. This program is Health Essentials. The number here at the radio station is 903-589-8507, just in case somebody wanted to call and ask me a question. Of course, obviously, I like answering questions related to how do we get the body back in good working order? Or what can we do naturally that doesn't have like a horrible, horrific drug side effect? Okay, are you with me on that? So if you want to call me and ask a question, 903-589-8507. Now, I don't have a picture of this to show you, but I was looking at a picture on the internet. It was an image of a red blood cell, and it was in color. It was just a single red blood cell. But it showed what a red blood cell looks like when the red blood cell it's not really holding the life-sustaining oxygen that you and I require. I think you're going to agree with me that maybe besides sunlight and maybe water, we require a very precious element that's critical for life on Earth. It's called oxygen. And your red blood cells contain hemoglobin, but like anything else, if you had a car that had a V6 engine, well, you don't want just one cylinder working and firing. You want all six cylinders working. Does that make sense? Yes, I know full well you can drive a pickup and have one engine cylinder misfire because of a bad spark plug, or maybe it's clogged up with burnt oil, but you can still drive it. It just runs rough. It's misfiring. I'm sure everybody has that experience on some level. If you don't, I could describe it to you. No, it just runs rough. Anyway, so when a red blood cell, when it holds the amount of oxygen that God designed it to, it like glows this brilliant red color. It's almost like it's emitting light. It is so interesting. Anyway, this is what I came across right here. I find this so interesting. I was looking at a medical journal that came from Eastern Europe, and does everybody know what an EKG is, an electrocardiogram? I mean, there's even commercials on the internet and probably television also about how you can do an EKG to measure the function of your heart and have a cardiologist read it for you real quick. Yeah, there was a time that I had to study that, but you do not want me reading an EKG. I just don't have enough practice. I'm sure I could learn it, but those days I don't really focus on that. But this is interesting right here. What they did was they took EKG readings of people that were suffering heart disease. Now, specifically, they were looking at people that had atherosclerosis. That's kind of a fancy medical term for hardening of the arteries. Now, whether you understand this fully or not, it is in your best interest for your arteries to be soft and supple and pliable and flexible and bendable, as opposed to being so stiff and rigid as like somebody poured fresh concrete into them. Yeah, that's not in your best interest to have lots of calcification and oxidized cholesterol building up in your arteries. But what they did was they did EKGs and blood profiles of patients that had these hard arteries, and they noticed that everything began to improve when they exposed them to the sunlight. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. That's free. I mean, as far as I know, it doesn't cost anything, but that's absolutely free to expose your body to the radiant energy of the sun. Do y'all know what near-infrared is, an infrared light? They're so interesting because when you put it over the skin, it penetrates deep and you can see the arteries and the veins. I know one thing, if I was trying to draw blood on somebody and I absolutely could not find a vein, well, I promise you I could find it if I had infrared light. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Oh, fine, Dr. Morgan. I hope you're doing well.
I am. Thanks for your call.
I was a little hesitant to call because your topic of the sunlight was so interesting. I wanted to continue hearing that. But anyway, I have a tendency once or twice a year to get very bad allergy attacks in the form of sinus and the drainage causes a lot of bronchial congestion. And I'm wondering and by the way, I do get sun exposure.
Good.
But I'm wondering if you have a favorite antihistamine, either natural or pharmaceutical, and if you know of a good way to clear out that bronchial congestion.
Yes, and I'm going to try to be very careful the way that I say this because I don't want to come across as trying to offer a medical cure on the radio or diagnose anybody. But there's a female pulmonologist that I like listening to her podcast. I think the lungs are actually quite incredible. I'm going to tell you what she uses, and that way I think I can get out of any trouble. Okay, so here's, do you know what a salt pipe is?
No. Or some, like salt and pepper?
Yeah, it's like salt. But for example, usually what they'll do is they'll just use raw salt. I mean, surely you have been on that aisle of the grocery store where you walk by where the spices are and you see those salt grinders that just have the raw chunks of salt in there and you just grind them over your food. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Sometimes they call the device, some people like to call it a salt pipe. You kind of think like my grandfather smoked a pipe, but that's not what I'm talking about. But it's the idea that you're inhaling something through a pipe. The other term that's used very frequently is called a salt inhaler. Have you ever heard of those? No?
Yeah. I'm sorry, the call's kind of fading in.
Yeah, I lost it. Anyway, if you were to go to the internet, I'm just saying Amazon.com for simplicity. I'm not saying, or go to Walmart.com. I don't care what you do. But they sell what are called salt inhalers. And it looks like somebody made from the Pottery Barn. But it's like a pottery ceramic device where in the very bottom of it, you just put these raw salt crystals. But what you do is you shake that stuff up and then you breathe the salt dust into your mouth. Anyway, but what this female doctor uses, she takes a form of liquid iodine. It's called Lugol's solution or Lugol's iodine. Have you ever heard that before?
Actually, no, I haven't.
Okay, I think Lugol, because I just spelled it out phonically, is L-U-G-O-L.
Okay.
Okay, so what she would do is she would put 2 drops of the Lugol's iodine into this mixture of salt. And so, this is just my analogy, but if you and I were in the wilderness and we didn't have any water to drink and we were both really thirsty and dehydrated, if we came across a pool of water in an oasis, I would say, please do not drink that. Let's sterilize it first. Well, even if you go to the grocery store now, you can go back to the sporting goods section where they have camping supplies and you can just buy iodine tablets. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes.
But iodine will sterilize almost any germ that would cause bronchitis or pneumonia or chronic severe sinusitis or almost any bug that could just wreck your respiratory system. Iodine can kill it. And it does so usually at 10 parts per million. So that's my way of saying it didn't take much iodine. But what this female doctor does is she will put two drops of the Lugol's iodine into this salt pipe or the salt inhaler, and then you would a person would either breathe it through their mouth or through their nose. So if you write these things down, it'll make sense once you look up the device, the salt inhaler. But I tell you, I've seen great results by using that technique. Great results.
Great results. Excellent.
Yeah. So that's one thing right there. So the next thing is this right here, and these are just my opinions, so just kind of take it. But I'm choosing to talk about a substance called black cumin seed. Have you ever heard of black cumin seed?
Yes, and I've heard of black seed oil. Is that the
oil
that comes from
same thing? Exactly. Yeah, we're on the same page. So, for example, back in the 1920s or whenever it was when they actually discovered King Tut's tomb, he had this amazing chamber next to where his burial chamber was, or there was a room where they had like 5,000 plus items that were like cataloged by the archaeologists. The King Tut was obviously going to require in the afterlife, although none of them were used. But that's one of the things they... Sorry, I'm just making a joke. But that was one of the things they found was... they found a jar that had cloves of, raw garlic in jars of honey that they found was fascinating, still super delicious. But they had jars of black cumin seed. Well, black cumin seed, if you look up the research on it, in some people, it works very, very well at helping to stabilize those mast cells and basophils that would release histamine. And so if the black cumin seed or the black cumin seed oil stabilizes them, they don't tend to overreact as much. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So you might look at that. That would be one of the simplest things that you could literally take a look at. I have a book on my shelf. The entire topic is about a small flowering plant that I think smells really good. It's called thyme or thyme. I have three big pots of it growing, and I just love to touch it and smell it. It just smells divine. But I didn't realize this. Almost every food industry on the planet, that's one of the top things that they use to keep the food free from infection or spoilage. Maybe that's more correct. So anytime that you go to the grocery store and you buy a pre-made, pre-packaged, processed food, I can almost guarantee you they got some thyme in there. They may have it labeled as a different, like thymol or some other natural preservative. And it is, and I didn't realize, and they use this in the makeup industry to keep it from spoiling or going bad, maybe I should say, or having fungus or mold or bacteria degrading the makeup. But this stuff is just used all over the world. But historically, there are some people that do really, really well when they take thyme and fenugreek at helping to regulate allergic responses, which maybe these allergies you're having, maybe it's more related to mold and stuff floating around in the air.
I guess it could be.
I mean, there's just a possibility. I mean, if we were in the laboratory back in college, I could say, let me take a swab of your nose and put on a petri dish and see if we can grow some type of a fungus or mold or bacteria. But that's just some of the things that I think. But those are all good things that you might consider and try. The obvious other stuff is if you're having like major congestion, that might be a pretty good time to lay off refined sugar and dairy products just to get all the mucus-forming gunk out of your body.
Yes, I try to avoid those as much as I can anyway. I eat very little of that. But
well,
of course, you can't avoid it completely because it's in so many things.
Yeah, but I like I like what you're saying, though. I mean, you're making a great effort, and I think I give you an A-plus on your report card. So if you look up salt inhaler, you might want to look up also Lugol's iodine liquid formulation. And just tell me what you think about all that. Very interesting. If you don't understand exactly everything that I'm saying, you could always go to a website called YouTube. I'm sure you have never heard of that before, ever.
No.
It's brand new to you. But you could look up probably short videos where they demonstrate exactly how to apply. I mean, it's as simple as taking two drops of iodine, applying it to the salt, shaking it up, and breathing it in. How about that? That's pretty simple.
Oh, that's, yes.
And I think I looked at one the other day. I think they used to cost like about $7.50 for a salt pipe or salt inhaler. That's $7.50. But now, with inflation, they're up to $14.99 each. So sorry, I can't help you in that department. Would you like me to give you my credit card number so you can buy it and I'll pay for it?
Oh, I'd love for you to.
All right, here's the numbers right here.
To go shopping.
That's right. Just, and this is my password. Gold, G-O-L-D. So, yeah, look into that, and that should be pretty easy to get. And to me, I would be very, very interested to see if you get like a really, really good response from it, and you're really pleased and really happy.
Oh, great. I will certainly give that a try.
Now, if you decide that you want to go and take a ton of steroids, that's your job. That's your business. I can't talk you out of that. But this would be something, I don't think there can be any harm at all. I've seen a lot of people use these, and I think that they're really golden.
Oh, okay.
All right. Hope that answers the question.
Salt pipe plus iodine, and then...
Yeah.
And then the thyme, and then the black seed oil.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great.
And the thing
now,
of it is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine.
Okay. The other question I had, and it might be a long topic, so, you know, you might or might not want to discuss it. The cholesterol.
Oh, my goodness. You're asking what's your question specifically?
Well, I hear from some sources that cholesterol is the cause of plaque in the arteries, and from other sources they say, well, no, it's really a symptom of the thing that's actually causing the plaque buildup, whatever that thing
is. I think there's truth to both of them. Now, I know I'm an oversimplifier, but you know what it would be like if you had a brand new car sitting in your driveway, and somebody comes along and just kind of scrapes some of the paint off of it accidentally. Maybe they run their bicycle into it from avoiding a Rottweiler chasing them. Not that I have that experience as a child. I don't know why I'd bring that up, but anyway, if you hit a car accidentally and you scrape the paint off of it, what's going to happen to that bare metal that's exposed to the, you know, the air?
It'll rust.
That's exactly it. The only, and my main point is, the only form of cholesterol that can ever take place in your arteries is oxidized cholesterol, if the cholesterol rusts. Now, if I can, let me give you just a little bit of information, because I think you're asking a good question, and I think this topic might benefit some people, but let me have a go at it. Okay, would you say that we're fearfully and wonderfully made?
Yes.
I would, too.
That's very scriptural.
But I would say also some of these things are so far above my pay grade that I don't fully understand how they work. I mean, it's just knowledge that's too wonderful for me. But let me tell you what I think I do know. We absolutely have to have cholesterol to be alive. And so let me give you an example. Most of the latest studies are demonstrating that if somebody goes to the doctor and they have a lipid panel done or a lipid profile, and the total cholesterol comes in at 140, then there's absolutely no way that person's ever going to make any hormones the rest of their life if it stays 140. You've got to have cholesterol to make your hormones. So if you want to have plenty of estrogen, not you, I'm talking about a woman, but if you want to have testosterone as a man, you must have cholesterol as your base or your substrate or building block to make testosterone. Well, if your total cholesterol is too low, like 140 or lower, good luck making testosterone. It ain't going to happen. So we need it. Your liver knows exactly what cholesterol is old and rusted and oxidized, and which one's healthy and in good working order. So the liver knows exactly which one is good to keep around and which one needs to be removed and scrubbed out of the bloodstream. Does that sort of make sense?
Yes.
Now, I don't know how it does that, but let me tell you what I think how I understand this. If you have a molecule of old rusted cholesterol that's floating around your bloodstream, when it goes through the liver actually knows, okay, this is a substance that's not doing, you know, Mr. Smith any good. We need to go ahead and kick it out and remove it and just get rid of it and pass it out of the body, detoxify it. But what if that cholesterol is not removed on its first pass when it comes to the liver? Well, it goes back into circulation and it goes all around the body one more time again. If it's not removed by the third pass as it goes through the liver, even though the liver is supposed to be able to do it, then your body has no choice. It's going to deposit it in the arteries. Now, maybe what I'm saying here also is, maybe this is also an indication that maybe the liver is not in that great a working order. Maybe somebody has a fatty liver or they have damage to the liver where it just can't do the job. Well, if we get a bunch of oxidized cholesterol, it just has a natural affinity for building up in the lining of the arteries. And what I'm saying is, we want to try to find a way to remove all this old oxidized cholesterol. And sometimes what I'll think of doing, and it takes a little while to do this, you can't do it like in one day, but there's a substance called soybean lecithin. If you had a dish at the house that had, let's just say that it was your birthday and somebody brought you over like a homemade lasagna because they love you and they wanted to make you a special treat. But after you eat the lasagna, you look at the glass dish and you think, man, that sucker has got like a whole lot of grease in it. How am I going to break that up? You'd probably put some Dawn dishwashing liquid in and let the soap break up the oil deposits. Does that make sense?
Sure. Uh-huh.
Well, I think of soybean lecithin like Dawn dishwashing liquid for greasy pots and pans that helps remove and scrub old cholesterol deposits from the lining of the arteries. You ever heard that before?
Possibly. It sounds a little familiar. So
yeah.
Does it need to be specifically soybean lecithin, not just any old lecithin?
Well, you're asking a great question. Dietarily, I would say the average person gets plenty of good lecithin when they just eat eggs. So in the brilliant orange sunlight glowing yolk of an egg, you've got lecithin in there. But I would say under the circumstances, if a person has too much old gunky cholesterol in their arteries, this is maybe where you might want to consider some soybean lecithin. That's the one that I'm probably most familiar with, and that's probably also the form that I could probably look up the most articles that have been published. I'm not saying that everything that I do is based on research, because research doesn't cover every topic. And, you know, sometimes you learn things that work, but you can't find an article on them. Just like sometimes I give aloe vera to people that have ruptured disc in their spine. Well, I just now found an article finally that proves that what I thought was true. But soybean lecithin specifically, it can help wash away, clean out all the old gunky cholesterol from the body. So another way of saying this is maybe a side note, I would venture a guess the vast majority of all Americans have a fatty liver right now. The liver's just clogged up. But lecithin, if you look at the research on it, is one of those things that may play an extremely beneficial role in helping to scrub all that fatty deposits and gunk out of the liver. When I say the word gunk, I know that's a made-up word, but you get where I'm coming from, don't you?
Yes, sure.
So if I said a person had a dirty, gunky liver, I don't mean that as an insult. It's just, when you're holding on to waste and toxins and poisons and dirt and debris, we want to clean that out so the liver can work properly, right?
Sure.
So that may not be everything. The other thing that I want to think of, a lady sent me a survey of the most popular items that were purchased in bulk from Whole Foods last year. And number three on the list was everybody was going ape over buckwheat. Have you ever heard of buckwheat before?
Oh, yes. I've had buckwheat pancakes.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, good example. Well, buckwheat is a plant. It's not the same as wheat that grows out in, the panhandle of Texas or up in those beautiful fields in Idaho or Montana. But buckwheat is a plant that has one of the naturally highest concentrations of a flavonoid compound called rutin. And I'm telling you, the more that I study rutin, I become very, very impressed with it. And so let me give you an example. I don't see these every single day, but I would say a couple of times a month I'm going to see somebody that their blood vessels are so broken, they're leaking, they're bleeding out. I mean, don't you go to church sometimes and see somebody with purple splotches all up and down their skin like they bumped into something, and you got these bloody purple patches of blood everywhere where it's leaking, bruising?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I could only use one thing for the rest of my life to resolve all that, it would be rutin or buckwheat. And really, this is what you want. You want to try to find a way to get all the blood vessels. And maybe what I'm really thinking of here is I'm thinking of your capillaries or your capillary bed. I know we have a brain and we have a nervous system, but I'm not so sure that the nervous system that's integral to the capillaries is not one of the most important systems in all the body, because what they do is they direct repairs to everything. If you have any damage to anywhere in your body, it's your capillaries that send signals to your stem cells. Make us some of this so we can repair that. Very interesting conversation, but rutin is one of those things that I'm so intrigued by because of its ability to help mend and heal tissues. It's really quite amazing. I've seen horrible-looking arms look beautiful in almost a month. When I say beautiful, that's in comparison to the bloody arms that looks like somebody beat them with a stick. What would you think if your doctor prescribed you a drug that made you bleed out all over your body and you look like you've been beat up by a gang? Would you like that?
I think I'd probably seek out another doctor.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Well, there's plenty of drugs that do that. Plenty. But I don't know of anybody that's ever said, Dr. Morgan, if you tell me one more time to eat a buckwheat pancake, you're in trouble. I think I had those as a child. They're pretty good.
Yes, they are.
Maybe we should start a restaurant in Tyler, the Buckwheat Inn. We can start making healthy breakfast for people. Anyway, so that's not the entire conversation, but let me give you two or three other bits of information. This is me, and if I can I just have artistic license for about 2 minutes on this topic, because this really bugs me to no end. I don't think it's really right just to look at a lipid panel and look at that all by itself, because it doesn't really tell you exactly what the problem is and where it's coming from. But if you were concerned about cholesterol, I think it would be in your best interest to have maybe some additional lab tests done. And so there's a substance in the body called uric acid. If I had elevated cholesterol, I think I might want to look at the uric acid levels just to find out if that's maybe one additional factor on causing some problems with my blood. The other one that I really want to sell you on is called fasting insulin. So we've got uric acid, we've got fasting insulin, and maybe as an additional labs that would be in your best interest to order. And there's another one that doctors order all the time, and I think they're smart to do so. It's called hemoglobin A1C. And so these three right here can give me a lot of clues. Now, if you really want to go hog wild, you can get a profile that actually measures the different forms of LDL, and they give you the different shapes and sizes, and they can tell you the ratios, and they can tell you which one's the problem. Now, on a lipid panel, one of the markers they look at is called triglycerides. And I'm not trying to overwhelm people with too much information, but when triglycerides are elevated, are you with me so far?
Yes.
It makes it super, super easy to make the worst form of LDL pattern B cholesterol that clogs your arteries. And so I think it's good to know that. And so if somebody says, but Dr. Morgan, my triglycerides are 48 or 52, I'm saying, well, that ain't your problem. You're fine. That's perfect. Way to go. But what if the total triglycerides were like at 100 or 125 or 150? Well, then guess what? Your body makes the type of cholesterol that forms hard plaque in your arteries. It's triglycerides. And so if a person has elevated triglycerides, then you've got the perfect storm going on. You're making it super easy for your body to convert the high triglycerides into that form of cholesterol, or LDL, pattern B, the other types, that actually form hardened, oxidized plaque in your arteries. So you have to understand that. And that way, yes, you can rely on a drug to do that, but that's not the same as a person saying, oh, my fasting insulin levels are too high. Well, how can I fix that? Well, maybe I could eat supper at 5 o'clock instead of eating at 10:30 at night. You know, even simple things like that make it easier for your body to heal. But the bottom line is, it's all the heavily processed, packaged foods that's loaded with like mega doses of sugar and seed oils. That's a pretty good way to wreck your arteries right there.
Yeah.
I hate to break it to you, but Chips Ahoy cookies all day long is probably not in your best interest, or a bag of nacho cheese Doritos. That's not going to help you be healthier. Which I know you know that.
Long ago. Yes.
But there's a lab testing service. It's called ownyourlabs.com. And if you look on their website, you could go down their list of all the tests they offer, but they have those profiles that measure all the different forms of cholesterol that could be either very, very beneficial and good for you, or they could be very, very bad and wreck your health. But to me, I think that's one of the greatest starting places, just to find out where a person's at. So if those profiles come back normal, I'm going to say to a person, don't worry if your total cholesterol is 240 or 250. And then they have a test called the calcium scoring test. It's where they take an x-ray and they run it through the coronary arteries. I personally think that's one of the greatest diagnostic tests of all time.
And the name of it is calcium scoring test?
Yeah, absolutely. You could go online right now and look up, what's the hospital system called now? Is it called UT South?
Oh, I wouldn't know.
I know we used to have Mother Francis and we used to have ETMC, but I think ETMC is now UT South. Is that right?
Man, I couldn't say.
Boy, so. you and I are not going to direct people today because I can't remember. But if you go on their website, you could just type in, well, actually, you could go to Google right now and you could type in, where can I get a calcium scoring test today? And it'll give you a couple choices. And I think they charge either $98 or $102 to do it. But you could just call them up and go in and get the thing done. If I'm not mistaken, some of these, you don't even need a doctor to order. You can go get it yourself. But if the calcium scoring test comes back zero, that means the arteries are in perfect working order. That means you're doing great. But the higher the number is, it does show you the amount of damage to your arteries, or calcification and old oxidized cholesterol. It'll show you that. I think it's worth every bit of the $102 they charge.
Oh, sure.
I mean, for the person that's interested in taking care of themselves.
Right.
Uh-huh. There's a whole percentage, or, you know, there's a whole faction of the population that has zero interest in anything that you and I are talking about right now. They're just thinking about something else. They're not thinking about health.
Right.
So I don't know how much, yeah. Or they might be thinking about things that really don't matter to a hill of beans as far as improving their health. But you and I, we're thinking about how can we be the very best? How can we have energy and be in good working order? And how can we heal the body when it's been injured? I like all those topics, obviously. So anyway, I hope that helps you today.
Oh, it does enormously. And, you know, I really hope this podcast is going to be listed on the KBGS website.
Yeah, it will
sometime soon, because I'm going to have to review the whole thing.
Oh yeah, I'm recording it right now.
Oh, good.
I've got to review this. It'll probably be like podcast number
H127,
somewhere around that range.
Okay.
But I'll record it in just a little bit, and I'll transfer it over, and, yeah, you'll have access to it. Wendy here at the station, I'll be driving to work on Monday morning at probably 7, and I'll already get a text from her saying it's a done deal, we've already loaded it up. I was just wondering, does Wendy show up here at the station at 2 a.m. in the morning to start working on Monday? I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, thanks for your phone call, buddy. Hope you have a great Saturday.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. I've listened to your show for years every Saturday morning.
Well, thank you for your call. I think your questions are really good, and I think you've helped a lot of people.
Thank you. I'm rooting for you. That's a pun.
You mean R-O-O-T-I-N or R-U-T-I-N? No, I'm joking. That was a good one right there. I like it. Hey, you're starting to see the light since we're talking about the sun this morning.
The sunlight, yes.
All right, hang in there, buddy.
Your sunlight topic.
Hey, thanks a bunch.
Bye.
All righty, bye-bye. And obviously, I'm rooting for him, too. The number here at the station, there's time for another call. I know I spent a lot of time with him, but he was asking things that I thought might benefit a lot of people. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning to you.
How are you today, ma'am?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
Well, how can I help you?
I have borderline diabetes.
You want to get rid of it?
Yes.
Has your doctor given you any recommendations, or has a physician assistant or nurse given you any recommendations on how to correct it and resolve it?
No.
Oh. Do they do a test called hemoglobin A1C?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
It just shows that those levels are up.
Okay. Let me float two or three ideas your direction, and we can just start picking and choosing which ones sound good to you, okay?
Okay.
All right, the number one country in the world that has more diabetics than any other on the planet is Pakistan. I didn't say they have more people than we do, but I think if they have like 140 million people living in Pakistan, every 14 people out of 100 people, they got diabetes. And they did a 10-year study, and they found out it was because they were eating processed junk food. So there's a chemical called monosodium glutamate. There's an artificial sweetener called sucralose aspartame. There's food preservatives called BHA and BHT. There's another one called carrageenan. When we eat packaged foods that contain these chemicals, then we start to develop what's called insulin resistance. Personally, I just think they poison us. I know that sounds wild, but if you drink a Diet Coke, I think you're just poisoning your body. Is that a harsh opinion on my part? Is that mean?
Pretty much.
Okay, thank you. At least I know where I stand with you now. You're very honest. Well, but if you want the diabetes to go away, you've got to do away with the poisons. So another thing that you could think of that's been shown to work is changing the timing of your eating. So there's a concept called intermittent fasting. Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes. I listen to you.
I can't even tell you how many people I've seen cured of their diabetes. They self-cured themselves just by doing intermittent fasting. So instead of eating three meals a day or four meals a day or five or six, or snacking, man, if they just ate two meals a day, sometimes that's all it takes to get the insulin levels to drop, and just about every lab test starts looking really, really good over time. Blood sugar comes down back to normal, but they just discipline themselves to maybe, and there's several ways to do this. Some of the latest studies show some people do really well when they have a really big high-protein breakfast, and they have a lunch maybe at 2 or 3 o'clock, and they skip supper. I've seen people completely get out of diabetes doing that. Other people have, like, lunch, and they have supper. So intermittent fasting or a feeding window of, like, 6 to 8 hours, sometimes that can be a gold mine for just reversing diabetes. Other people, they completely cure themselves by doing more of a carnivore or ketogenic diet. All that means is they're just drastically reducing, well, a modified version maybe, they're drastically reducing the starches and the carbohydrates. Would that be horrible to eat a salmon fillet with a plate of broccoli and butter?
No.
Oh. How about with a Diet Coke? See, I'm testing you now.
Yeah.
Are you going to pass the test? Hey, I have a free coupon to get a six-pack of Diet Cokes. Would you like it?
No.
Oh, my goodness, you just passed. And so if you would consider those things, that's really what's in your best interest. I've had other patients that if they just eat meat and vegetables and if they want to eat fruit, it would be things like blueberries or strawberries, raspberries, then that can just completely reverse it. Now, let me give you one point that I think is valid. The average diabetic has, and I'm going to say on average, they have 11 spikes of insulin a day. If you ate two meals a day and that's all you ate, that's all you put into your mouth, was those two meals, you would just have two spikes of insulin. Now, what if you said, I don't want to do that? My doctor told me that I need to keep my blood sugar even, so I'm going to have peanut butter and crackers in the morning, and then 30 minutes later, I'm going to have a piece of fruit, and then I'm going to have a cup of coffee with a spoonful of sugar in it, and then I'm going to have breakfast. That's four spikes of insulin. The poor pancreas is just getting exhausted and worn out by producing so much insulin. So everything that you want to accomplish is going to be accomplished by trying to lower your spikes of insulin. So just remember, diabetics are snacking all day long. In medicine, they say that doesn't cause diabetes. Baloney. It's the number one cause of diabetes. The more that you snack in between meals, you're just asking for diabetes to hit you and never let go. Have you ever? So I think that's a principle that the research is bearing out. I don't have it exactly right in front of me right now, but there was one study that I looked at that people that have more outdoor time and exposure to natural light within reason, they have absolutely the lowest diabetes. So would that be easy for you just to go outside and spend time outdoors doing yard work or sitting in a chair, reading your Bible, something like that?
Yeah.
Well, that's easy.
Yeah.
And so
I've been having a lot of upper respiratory problems, like you was talking about with that other man a while ago.
You know what my favorite story was that I heard this week?
What?
There was a doctor that was taking care of a person that had horrible bronchitis, and this man also had a condition called bronchiectasis. And I think he had pneumonia. How much worse can I make this story?
Yeah.
But what he did was, the guy was so sick that he couldn't get him in the sun. So what he did was, he purchased this red light therapy blanket. Just like if you were to type in red light therapy blanket on Amazon, you'd come up with a bunch of hits. And all he did was he put that over the man's bare chest and back. And the man completely recovered from his upper respiratory tract infection. It's just an amazing story. And the guy was an emergency room doctor. So I appreciate stories like that when they start thinking outside the box. But obviously, it's going to be so warm and nice today, you could probably go outside with like a tank top on. And you could probably just kind of orient your body toward the sunlight. It doesn't have to be straight up 12 o'clock where it's like super intense. It can be like later in the afternoon, like 4:30 or something like that. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Oh, good. Well, you're easy to please. I'm going to give you a free coupon for 30 minutes of sunlight. You can use it however you want today.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, we're all out of time for today, but I really do appreciate your phone call, ma'am.
Thank you, and have a blessed day.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Bye. You're listening to Health Essentials on KBGS, FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.